Hello, and welcome to Nothing Ever Happens in Canada. But we know this is simply not true. This is a Canadian podcast about the myths, legends, and just good old stories Canada has to tell. I'm Canadian Girl. Thanks so much for joining me here today on this Klondike adventure. Thanks to listener Joyce D, who reached out on Twitter and requested more Yukon stories, we are heading up to the Yukon during those exciting Gold Rush days. So shout out to you, Joyce D. This Yukon adventure goes out to you. We're going to jump right in alongside the Stampede, as some called it, where an estimated 100,000, mostly men, but of course there was some brave women there too, and we are going to meet one of those brave women today. The estimated 100,000 people who would battle the elements up in the great north of Canada and take on Mother Nature herself at her most unforgiving, just to find some of that beautiful Klondike gold they had heard so much about. We are going to meet a couple, the Goddards, who worked together to not only come up with a genius plan to get not only themselves, but also many others down the Upper Yukon River and into Dawson City to join the legendary Gold Rush. The Goddards did it all with a very small, but very smart, pocket steamship that today is a treasured piece of North American history that was once lost for over 100 years. But first, we gotta go over a little bit of that business stuff. If you are loving these adventures, please let me know by leaving a review on the app you're listening to. And if you can, on Apple Podcasts, as Apple Podcasts controls the podcast charts. Every time a review is left for the show, we move around on the podcast charts and get to meet more awesome listeners just like you to join the crew. The link to leave a review can always be found in the show notes below. You can always reach out on social media. My handle is @NothingCanada on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Those reviews are so important to this little show, as you know. Most recently, we were just on the Ireland Top 200 History Podcast Charts, sitting around about 160. Hello to all my listeners in Ireland. Another awesome way you can help support the show is by donation. Donations help this show out so much, covering all the tiny extra costs that come with running a podcast, especially the monthly ones. Your donations are always much appreciated, and I thank you so very, very, very much. Most recently, we received donations from Jen S., Martin B., and Lewis J. I thank you all so much for your kind donations. The link to make a donation can always be found in the show notes below or at nothingcanada.com at the top of the page. You can find our PayPal button there. All you have to do is hit it, and the rest is up to you. We made it through all that business stuff once again. Now it's time to get ready and head up to the Klondike. Grab your best boots, jacket, and such to keep warm. You're gonna want them. Oh, and food. Definitely some food. We're going to need lots of food for this adventure. We've got a lot of miles to cover, and four of those miles are up a 35-degree mountain pass. I'm not kidding. Oh yeah, and one more thing. If you have scuba gear, you might want to bring that too. If you're brave enough to get in these cold Yukon waters, it just might be worth your time. We start our story back in 1896 up in the Yukon Territories, which is most famously known for her gold rush days. And that's exactly why we're here today. As word spread across Canada, and I mean slowly, then down to the US, then the rest of the world, it took about a whole year, by July 1897, for everybody else to hear about the gold in the Klondike. A well-to-do couple from Seattle, Washington, would put their heads together right away and came up with a great plan to make their way to the fields of gold that they had heard so much about in the newspapers. Meet Albert and Clara Goddard. Though I realize they are not Canadian, just hang in there with me. They are heading up this way very soon and did some pretty amazing things while they were here in Canada. Right before they hopped on a ship in Washington to get to the Klondike, they had a very special steamer built. Today, they are known as pocket ship steamers, as they are meant to be easily taken apart and put back together again when needed, and hence very easy to transport, which is exactly what the Goddards needed, a steamer just big enough to carry themselves, a few other paying passengers, and their supplies down the Yukon River and into the now famous Dawson City, believed to be full of gold. Albert Goddard, who went by A.J. Goddard, was the owner of the Pacific Iron Works in Seattle, Washington, which was the only machine shop in the area to survive the Great Seattle Fire of 1889, and he was also a very skilled engine designer by trade. He would have his pocket ship steamers. That's right, he did have two made, and they were both brought up to the Klondike and used, but today we are only focusing on the one named after him, the A.J. Goddard steamship, as she is the only one who has survived the true test in this life, and that is time. But back to these pocket ship steamers. A.J. Goddard would have both the hulls of the ships made in San Francisco, California. And then, of course, the machine work was done at his ironworks company in Washington. The pieces of the pocket ship steamers were boxed up and shipped to Skagway, Alaska, where A.J. Goddard, wife Clara, and their crew would each grab a piece of their pocket steamers and start heading out on one of the biggest adventures of their lifetime. Each piece of both of the steamers had to be carried all the way to Bennett Lake in British Columbia from Skagway, Alaska. That's just over 74 kilometers or 46 miles, hauling pieces of two small steamers, like the hulls, the boilers, engines, and more, through the rugged wilderness to the edge of Bennett Lake. And on their way to Bennett Lake in British Columbia, they have to cross the famous Chilicoot Pass. That's the one you've all seen in the pictures of the huge line of the Gold Rush enthusiasts climbing up the mountain. The Goddards and their crew will face, and unfortunately us, will face this 35-degree mountain climb just 29 kilometers or 16 miles into our adventure today. This is the point where a lot of people gave up on their dreams as they just could not do it. But not the Goddards, their crew, or their pocket steamships. They lugged each piece, one by one, not only up, but also down the other side of the mountain. Honestly, this feat is unbelievable. Well done. Once they reached Bennett Lake in British Columbia, they would set up camp for the winter and build their pocket steamships, so that come spring, they would not only be the biggest boat to take off and head for the Great Gold Rush, she would also be the most efficient, carrying extra paying passengers so the Goddards could make some extra money for all their hard work. And that was their ultimate goal, to have this steamship fund their adventure by ferrying paying passengers and their equipment down the Yukon River. What they were also banking on was being the fastest. The hull of their steamships were made out of metal. This was a huge advantage against the tiny wooden boats. They hoped that they would get to the gold fields first. Most did not come prepared as the Goddards, so they spent the winter building these tiny wooden boats from the forest around them. These tiny wooden boats have been sadly nicknamed coffin boats, as for many, that is what they became. The tiny wooden boats were no match for the wild Yukon River, with its whitewater rapids and all. After waiting all winter to get down the frozen river to the gold, many left too soon. Within just 48 hours of the ice melting and breaking apart, the shores of Bennett Lake were empty. Sadly, many were unprepared for what was hiding around one of the corners of the Yukon River, and were taken over by it, especially near the White Rapids section. It was the morning of May 28, 1898, when the ice had melted enough for the A.J. Goddard to make her maiden voyage. By May 31st, the AJ Goddard had made its way from Bennett Lake in British Columbia to Carcross in the Yukon, which is about 22 kilometers or 14 miles it had traveled up the Yukon River so far. She was 15 meters long or 49 feet and 3 meters or just over 9 feet wide. She had a solid metal hull and any wood that was needed was used from the nearby forest at Bennett Lake. Pieces such as the pilot house, bow railings, splash bulkhead, wheel support, and more were all made on site over the winter. She was registered as a Canadian vessel, number 107517, and listed A.J. Goddard as the navigator and Clara Goddard as the captain or skipper. The A.J. Goddard pocket steamship had between 9 and 22 passengers on board for her first journey, depending on which story you read. By June 2nd, she would arrive in Tagish, where she had to wait as Marsh Lake, which was up ahead, was still frozen. While here, she would ferry paying passengers and their equipment from Bennett Lake to Tagish. On June 16th, 1898, it is said the Marsh Lake ice was finally broken up by famous RCMP officer Sam Steely, allowing the Gold Rush stampede to continue into Dawson City. On June 17th, she was only the third steamer at the time to make her way across the treacherous White Rapids in Miles Canyon. But after battling down the Yukon River all the way from Bennett Lake, BC, which is roughly 800 kilometers or 500 miles, the little pocket steamship known as the A.J. Goddard would sail into Dawson City and arrive to a round of applause and cheers as she was the first ship of that size to come sailing into the harbor. None of the other, much larger ships would show up till sometime later. With somewhere between 9 or 22 passengers on board, like I said before, depending on which story you read, either way, there were a few, and their equipment, the A.J. Goddard was a success. The little pocket steamer had made the journey that most could not even begin to imagine. A.J. Goddard got right to work, turning the boat around and sending her back down the river to pick up more passengers to be the Yukon River's first ferry boat back and forth. But what they did not account for was this time they'd be working against the current and, more importantly, against the rapids, a much harder challenge than riding them into Dawson City. The A.J. Goddard only ever got to make the glorious run into Dawson City one time because after just barely making it back to Lake LaBarge, which is 500 kilometers or just about 300 miles, they decided at that point she was strictly only sailing back and forth across Lake LaBarge, acting as a ferry for those who were willing to pay for her services. They were not going to make the dangerous journey down the Yukon River again to Dawson City. The Yukon River proved to be too treacherous, even for the tiny pocket steamship that thought that she could. Which she did one time, and she definitely gets credit for, because that's just wild, and I can't imagine being on that boat at that time. Even more amazing, Clara Goddard herself was credited with being the first woman to pilot a steamer on the upper Yukon River during the Gold Rush days. That's right, Clara was right there with her husband, AJ, steering the ship, and many times all on her own. What an amazing, brave woman. We salute you and remember you during Women's History Month here in Canada. Though you may not be Canadian born, you certainly acted like one up here in the Great North, and we couldn't be prouder to have you be a part of our Klondike history. The Nothing Canada Souvenir Shop. Here you can find great pieces from your favorite adventures to take home with you, like a Yukon UFO tote bag, a What the Maple Syrup hoodie, or a Mystery Mountain notebook. The choice is totally yours. We also have added some exciting new Nothing Ever Happens in Canada designs. Head over to the souvenir shop today and find the perfect piece from your favorite adventure and help support the show. The link to the souvenir shop can always be found in the show notes below or at nothingcanada.com.
Legendary Africa is a podcast where a disembodied voice speaks, shouts, swears, and whispers myths, legends, and lore from Africa straight into your ear canal. Join me, my two dogs, and our companion moth named Squirt on an adventure through the African continent. We find out about dragons, witches, fairies, magicians, demigods, boy heroes, dragon-slaying princesses, ogres, ghosts, Egyptian treasure, and so much more. Originally a two-sister-led production, Legendary Africa is an indie podcast now led solely by Tishirapatha after her sister passed away. A proud member of Straight Up Strange Productions, Legendary Africa brings you myths, mysteries, and magical stories from the magnificent continent of Africa. Available on all popular podcasting platforms including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Castbox. Follow on Twitter and Instagram at LegendaryPod1 and LegendaryPod. Stay safe, stay sexy, and stay legendary.
Head over to straightupstrange.com today and check out not only our strange family, but also our amazing collection of strange merch. That's straightupstrange.com to check us all out. So what happened to the pocket steamship? The AJ got her after that, you ask? Let me tell you. But first, I want to give a little shout-out to some of the sources we use today. Our first shout-out goes to Disney Plus and National Geographic. They, along with listener Joyce D, are the ones who inspired today's adventure. I was watching Draining the Oceans, Season 2, Episode 4, a National Geographic show on Disney Plus, when I came across this amazing Klondike tale. So if you want to check it out, I highly recommend it, if you have access to Disney Plus. And of course, like always, if you want to see some really amazing pictures from the story today, head over to nothingcanada.com and check out the show notes section. Shout out to the amazing book, The Wreck of the A.J. Goddard, by Lindsay Thomas, Doug Davidge, and John Pollack, which is filled with any and every picture you would want to see from this story today. It was such an amazing and great resource. I highly recommend you checking it out. Shoutouts also go to register.yukonhistoricplaces.ca, theglobeandmail.com, whitehorsestar.com, Wikipedia, whatsupyukon.com. To see the full list, visit nothingcanada.com under the show notes section. Without your amazing resources, these adventures would not be possible today. I thank you all for your amazing shows, books, and articles. But now, let's get back to the A.J. Goddard. The A.J. Goddard became a ferry for the next 3 years, taking passengers back and forth across Lake LaBarge and their supplies. In the fall, on October 21st, 1899, she would be sold by the Goddards, who packed up their belongings and headed back home to Washington. The Canadian Development Company would purchase the A.J. Goddard and had her continue to ferry passengers and equipment across Lake LaBarge. Less than 2 years later, on October 12, 1901, it is said there was a horrible storm on Lake LaBarge that night. Like the terrible October storms in the Great Lakes that we have talked about here before on the channel, this would be very similar to one of those. The tiny pocket steamer that had survived so much already finally met her match that night when she was hit with waves and winds so badly they couldn't keep the fire in the boiler going to save the ship. Once the fire was out, all hope was lost and the A.J. Goddard sunk very quickly into Lake LaBarge, never to be seen again for over 100 years. On board that night were 5 people in total, the captain, Charles MacDonald, who sadly went down with his ship, the cook, who was thought to be quite talented, thanks to the onboard menu items found amongst the wreckage, Faye Ranson, and John Thompson, the fireman, who tried so hard to keep the ship's boiler going until the very end. All three tragically lost their lives that evening. Two people did manage to survive that night, the boat's engineer, Julius Stockfield, and the only passenger on board at the time, C.P. Snyder, by grabbing onto the wheelhouse, which had come detached during all the commotion and was made of wood and thankfully floating. As the storm blew over the lake and calmed down enough, a nearby trapper, believed now to be one of the local indigenous people, would hop into his small boat and paddle out to the middle of the lake to rescue the pair after hearing their cries for help in the night. If not for him, they likely would have died of hypothermia. The final resting spot for those that lost their lives that night was placed just 3 kilometers, or just about 2 miles away from the place where the ship went down, at a police station so they could be watched over always. The ship went down just about 100 meters, or just over 300 feet offshore, from a location marked on a map in 1936 as Goddard's Point. That has been the area's name, leaving the perfect clue for anyone who may come looking for the treasured wreck site. But somehow, it was forgotten. As far as anybody knows, no one has seen the Goddard since the day she sank back in 1901. For the next 100 years, the A.J. Goddard wreck site would remain so elusive that it earned the title the Ghost Ship of Lake LaBarge. Until an amateur diver, Doug Davidge, who is from Whitehorse and had heard some rumblings in the dive community about a wreck in Lake LaBarge, he was able to locate the location on a radar, but because this was back in the 1990s, he didn't have a way to pinpoint the location with GPS, so the A.J. Goddard remained the ghost ship of Lake LaBarge. Until in 2008, with the help of the National Geographic Society and others, Doug Davidge was able to lead them to an area of the lake he thought was worth their time. And Doug was right. They had found it. The crew and Doug spent 28 days diving the site of the A.J. Goddard that July. Grab that scuba gear if you brought it. We are heading down to check out the wreck. It's about a 15-meter dive at most, or about 50 feet, if you're feeling up for it. The A.J. Goddard sits at the bottom of Lake LaBarge and looks eerily undisturbed for the most part. All that's missing are the wheelhouse, which the two survivors that night were afloat on, and the smokestack. Everything else was remarkably pretty much where it should be. Most of the contents of the ship are either still on board or scattered around the lake floor where she sits today. There is an axe that can be seen on the ship's deck. Some say it points to the crew's final attempts to save their ship. The barge they had been towing that night was cut loose, and there was still unburnt firewood placed in the boiler as she went down, suggesting they tried till the very last second to keep that fire going. This Klondike treasure today is considered the most significant discovery in nautical archaeology of the Yukon territories. Because the A.J. Goddard is the most complete vessel, along with its collection of artifacts from any other that exists from this time period, she really is a true piece of Klondike treasure that should remain protected. As for the many other shipwrecks connected to the Klondike days, most have been salvaged, reused, or repurposed, as nothing goes to waste up here in these territories. Since the A.J. Goddard was able to hide for so long, many believe this is why, thankfully, she is so intact. In 2010, she was named a Yukon Historic Site. Some interesting items found on the shipwreck or around it were shoes, coats, an old cooking stove, the crew members' bags, cups, bottles full of ink and vanilla, a pocket magnifying glass, wood and metal working tools, a carpenter's mallet, an anvil, a small blacksmith's forge, and so much more. Most are so well preserved thanks to the cold, clean Yukon waters. In total, over 100 artifacts were cataloged from the wreck. The most interesting find of all was a very old record player, along with three records. With the songs, Ma Only Is One by Faye Templeton, this was the record actually still in the record player. And there were two more, Rendezvous Waltz and the harp that once played through Terrace Halls. At the time, this record player sold for $15 in the Sears catalog, which would be about $460 today. So this was a pretty nice record player, and though there is no written record, most imagine the A.J. Goddard had music going as it ferried its passengers back and forth across Lake LaBarge. Some of the artifacts removed from the ship can be seen today at the Yukon Transportation Museum in Whitehorse. No longer a ghost ship now that she has been found, the A.J. Goddard now sails through history as the little pocket steamer that did the impossible and became a part of Klondike history and one of the Yukon's greatest underwater treasures left behind from those crazy gold rush days. I'm Canadian Girl. I hope you enjoyed this Klondike adventure today. Until next time, my friends.
This podcast is a part of Straight Up Strange Productions. Discover more shows like this one at straightupstrange.com.
You guys, who always hang around till the very end, are the absolutely best people out there, but you already know that. I hope the stars align and send some luck your way, because we could all use a little of that right now. I'm Canadian Girl. Stay safe, my friends.